First of all, good morning to everyone, and for those of you who are just visiting, it's lovely to see you here, and you are most welcome. As I mentioned, I'm Ali, Nikki and I, and our three children. Every time I preach, I suddenly realise it's a year further on. We've been here now 12 years, I've been entrusted, I say entrusted, Duncan had to correct me on how to use it with Britney Spears' mic as I tried to put it on upside down. So again, a work in progress on that one. I'm aware also, as a teacher, I keep being reminded that my cultural references are getting older and older. So apologies to students if you don't actually know who Britney Spears is. You can Google it after the service and find out what I mean by a Britney Spears mic. But yes, it's very humbling as a teacher. And they go, "Sir, we don't know that. We're too young." And you realize they weren't even born when the things you're talking about. I also have to apologize for the weather outside because I'll literally read it word for word. Another welcome. Welcome to spring. So, and then I'll go on to say, I don't know about you, but it's been quite a wet winter. And first day of March, it continues to be a wet spring. But there's the joys of Scotland, hey? So, welcome spring, new term. Hopefully, you're starting to feel, or will soon start to feel, that start for the summer, for things new. We build Lent and we get ready for that harvest. And there's an element of that that really fits with today's talk. So, I've called it stewarding of energy, and I'm going to try and stick just to energy because there are a number of different topics that this can sort of creep into, and I don't want that to happen too much. So, but before I do that, those of you who have been with us the last few weeks will remember we've been working through a series called Walking with God. And a little plug, if you have missed any of the sermons, I would really encourage you to go onto the church website and check out the podcasts. I found it really uplifting. I also found some of them really, really challenging. And I think as a community, that's really, really important in church. I'm afraid to say we're not just here to be picked up and told how great we're doing. We're also here to realize that there are things we need to work on, things we need to think about and consider, and maybe even change. So today I've been given the task, as I say, of talking about our energy, one of the most valuable resources, a nice small topic again, so thank you, Jamie, I appreciate it. After the great sermons we've had, this will either continue that thread, or you'll remember this as the slight blip, and things will go back to normal next week. So there's me finishing with the self-deprecation there. In all seriousness, though, when I last spoke, I said, and I gave a sort of a warning, that my sermon came from saying to Jamie, "I've got this idea and something I want to talk about." And Jamie said, "That sounds like a great sermon." And I had highlighted that I was actually just wanting to talk to him about it. This didn't come in that situation. This time, Jamie came to me and asked me to talk about a topic. What Jamie didn't know, again, if you ever wanted to believe in things other than coincidences, what Jamie didn't know was that this topic was something that I was actually challenged over already and was trying to work on myself and to do a lot better in my own life. So so I'd say at this point, there's nothing like preaching what you're trying to practice. And the reason I say that is because I'm not standing here saying, "I've nailed this, I've got this sorted, here's how I've done it." This talk today is very much about, here's something that I think is really, really important. As I prepared for this sermon more and more, I realized that actually, yeah, we really do need to work on how we steward our energy. We need to re-look at it regularly. We need to think about it, and we need to think about what things are working on it. So there'll be some examples of where I've been challenged with this in my life, but as I'll explain as we go through, it's going to be different for everyone. So for those of you that don't know me, when I'm not helping Nikki raise our incredible, but if exhausting at times, three children, I'm a high school teacher, as I mentioned at the start, on the east side of Glasgow. Hopefully I'll be a little less heckling, though I'm not sure with Barnaby and Ant in the room. But to make me feel a little more at home, and you'll maybe remember this from last time, we're going to start with a favorite of all teachers, the learning intention and the success criteria for today's talk. Okay. So, as you'll see on the screen, my intention today is to help us understand a bit more about how the Bible calls us to steward our energy. If I've been successful in this job, so here's our success criteria at the end, I want you to be more comfortable about thinking these three questions. What parts of my life take the most of my energy? What parts of my life is God asking me to give more energy to? And the third question, what is God asking me to do to reset where I spend my energy? So you'll be pleased to know three nice, easy questions for the first day of spring. You'll also be pleased to know that at various points we are going to refer to scripture, always a good thing in a sermon, I suppose. So I'm going to jump around a fair bit. This topic isn't one where only one book of the Bible talks about it. So feel free to find them in your own Bible, but I will put the verses up on the screen. Unlike in school as well, I have to correct my brain here as you all get your phones out. You are allowed to use your phone for the Bible and also to take notes, but I will be watching for any use of Block Blast whilst I'm talking. That's a favorite in school. See, the cultural reference the other way. Or the student, you know what that is, don't you? Yeah, see, the students know what that one is. So, I want to start with some of the foundation. Really important we start at this very beginning. Unlike you, I'm quite rusty on my ancient Greek. And so, mainly for my benefit, but if you weren't too sure about this, the actual word energy comes originally from the ancient Greek word energeia, if I have pronounced it correctly according to my Google YouTube video. So, happy to be corrected by anyone if not. Which actually comes from an even more ancient word, ergon, which means work or action. Now, when I looked at that and thought a little bit more about it in prep for this, I found it really interesting that the very origins of this word suggest the production of something, the development or bettering of something or someone. And yet, I'm sure, like me, you can all think about times when we've probably spent a fair bit of our energy on things that produce or better very little. But really good that we can see where it came from. It's a word used at various points in various ways through the Bible. And so the first verse I want us to think about is it's referred to as God's energy. So we talk about God's energy. And we're going to now look in the New Testament. And if you want to turn with me to Colossians 1, verse 29, as I say, I will put them up on the screen as we're going to jump around quite a bit. We see here in Colossians, it says, to this end, I strenuously contend with all the energy Christ so powerfully works in me. And this is what I refer to as God's, when I say God's energy, this is that bit that we're talking about here. Go back to the previous one before that. It's the energy, I suppose, that gives us strength. Strength to do things that we can't imagine being able to do. Might be the confidence to step out in faith, or the belief that we're walking with God, not on our own through a situation, whatever that might be. So there's that kind of God's energy. The cultural link that sprang to mind, and again, apologies for the age of my reference, it's maybe the biblical version, and obviously much better, of Red Bull. Maybe showed where I was this week in terms of energy, but never mind. It's always ironic when you do a sermon on energy and you feel absolutely exhausted. But you might remember that quote, those famous adverts, Red Bull gives you wings. Okay. Thank you, Barnaby. Told you, less heckling, not no heckling. Red Bull gives you wings. There we go. Okay, thank you. So, we're going to move on now. I'm losing everyone. So we've got this kind of God's energy that we see within us. The other energy that Paul talks about is resurrection energy. Very different type of energy, very clearly pointed out in the Bible that this is very different. And the next verse I'm going to use for this one is Ephesians 1, verses 19 and 20. And we read here, and his incomparable great power for us who believe. That power is the same as the mighty strength he exerted when he raised Christ from the dead and seated him at his right hand in the heavenly realms. So this is a very different power than the one we've just talked about. The ability to raise us to new life. Same power he used to raise Christ from the dead. This is the ultimate power. Power that means that on that day when, in reality, our earthly bodies fail, and our loved ones say goodbye to us, God's resurrection energy means that that's not actually the end. We raised up to a new life with him in heaven. Very different to that energy that maybe helps us cope through some of the days we have here on earth. And as I say, Paul makes it really clear that these forms of energy are really different. The first is working within us as we go through our lives. And the second, as we've just seen, is that resurrection energy both from God but used in a very different way. So there's a bit of our foundation, our sort of understanding. We know our ancient Greek now, we're all philosophers. And we understand that there are these two types of energy that God talks about. As a teacher, I'm always reminded that it's great telling people about these things, but how do they actually use it in real life? What's the impact going to be? So that's the bit I want to now think about. I want us to now think about how do we actually steward this energy? We've read what it is. We've read that there's this energy within us, God's power. But we want to actually think about it. And I've called this section personal vitality. And every time I say it in my head, it feels like a wellness package or a supplement promotion. Personal vitality, get yourself in order. But actually, there is, I suppose, a bit of reality with that. We need to remember that our energy that we talk about is both physical and mental. It's not just in this book, this Bible that we read. It's something real. It's something that, as I say, is both physical and mental. And as anyone who's competed in sport, or to be honest, even life knows, we can't do the best without looking after both of them. If your physical body's great, but your mind's in the wrong place, then you're not going to perform anywhere near as good as you should do. I want to then split this into, as I put there, three sections. So we've got the energy of work, the necessity of rest, and self-control. So we'll first look at energy of work, and if you want to turn there to Colossians 3, verse 23, we see a very simple instruction. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for human masters. As I read that, I think, really simple instruction. Whatever I'm doing, however big or small, don't do it for people here on earth, do it for God. I'm sure you're very different to me. I get quite uncomfortable as well when I start thinking about that and thinking about how well I've maybe worked at certain things, if it is for God. Maybe I'd rather it was for a human master, but the verse is really clear. We should do it as if we're working for God. Now, I want to clarify, I'm not saying that everything has to be done as a big piece of worship with songs. When I'm putting the bins out at 7 o'clock on a Monday morning, I'm maybe not hovering over the bins and praying. But to give another example, maybe when I don't recycle everything I can from my dinner because I'm tired, kids are fighting, just want to go to bed. so it all just gets thrown in the black bin. Obviously, this is hypothetically. I'm a geography teacher, just to clarify. Everything is recycled in my house all of the time. Okay, but hypothetically, if that was the situation, maybe I should consider whether I'm doing that as well as I should do, looking after God's planet. A more real one for me right now, when I'm tired and we're rushing the kids' bedtime routine, because I just need to switch off. I've had a day with 1,400 kids, I've got three of my own at home, and I'm ready to just sort of be done with all of that stage. And I don't want to read the same book for the 15th time. It's very differently if I think, actually, I'm not doing that for the simple reason of the routine. If I considered that I'm reading that book for the 16th time because God wants me to develop my relationship with my son, that hits very differently. Doesn't maybe make it any easier in the moment, but it does hit very differently. We should try, I think, to remember that whether it's with children, spouses, friends or employers, the effort we put into something, the energy we give it, that's what people see. If we're trying to be Christ-like, as we're called to be, we're trying to show Christ on earth to people, if we think about it, are we happy with the image we're always giving of Christ in those moments? Have I given all my heart to reading that bedtime story at that routine? Sounds great though, but let's be honest, if we go full tilt, giving everything all of the time, we will absolutely burn out. And it's true, we will. And this, of course, brings us on to the next part, the Sabbath. So let's turn to Exodus 20. I'll give you a little longer because this is quite a big passage. So verses 8 to 11. So Exodus 20, verses 8 to 11. Some of you will be quite familiar with it, maybe. But we do read here that God knew we couldn't go all the time with all our heart. We weren't planned for it. So let's have a look at this before we carry on. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigners residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them. But he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. I've always found that I get the concept of a Sabbath, the idea of resting, but working out quite what it means for me in 2026 is a little bit harder. I read that, I go, great, but I don't have any animals. You'll be pleased to know I don't have any servants. Getting my kids to work? Maybe. Okay. So we need to maybe put a bit of cultural context there. And then, as always, we need to think about how this relates to our world. So life for most people then was very physical. Subsistence farming. People were working the land and with their hands. So in Exodus, we're reminded here that God created the world in 6 days, and he rested on the seventh. And so in honor of that, we're called to create our world, whether that's working the land, whatever it might be, in 6 days, and rest on the seventh. Whether that's, as I say, working on a farm, working in a school, studying, running a business. Exodus reminds us when I read it, or reminds me when I read this, certainly, and maybe yourselves, that we're not just simply taking a Sabbath so that we don't burn out. We're taking a Sabbath to remember what God did. That same way we don't do good things in our community to get something, it's in honor of the thing that God's already given us, that sacrifice he's already made. If God had the power to create the heavens and the earth, he absolutely had enough power to push through the seventh day if he so wanted to. He definitely wasn't burnt out. We might be, but he wasn't. He took it for a reason. He wanted to show us that even he took a day each week to stop the building and rest. We don't get told what that rest looked like. It's not crystal clear whether he sat there watching some TV or what, you know what I mean. Because we know that it's going to be different for everyone. The purpose of the day of rest, that Sabbath, is for us to rest and refocus on him. We remind ourselves that he created the world in 6 days. We're focusing back on him. Maybe for you, that's a Sunday, and this service forms part of it. Maybe you have to work on a Sunday, and therefore your Sabbath is actually a Tuesday. You're maybe even listening to this sermon on catch-up online. When your Sabbath is not the important part. But Exodus does make it clear it should be weekly. And it should be a day. It's not an hour. It's not a morning, it's a day. What you do on that day, well, that shouldn't relate to your work. God was building our planet, our world. It should be mentally and physically restful and restorative. Maybe it's time spent with your family, because you don't get much of that during the week when you're working. Maybe it's time spent on your own or with friends. I hope it involves some time with God. But the act of a Sabbath is to rest, to recharge our mind and body and focus in on him. He might have been able to push through to the seventh day. We're not him. It also sets a rhythm. Work six, rest one, repeat. Work six, rest one, repeat. Stewarding our energy is not just about choosing what energy to give where, it's about knowing when to stop. We all have a limit, a point when we can't give all our heart to that task, as we saw in that first part. Pushing past that limit to the point of exhaustion, I'll be honest, may on occasion be necessary. I'd love to stand here and say I get my Sabbath every single week and it's guaranteed and I'm very, very good at it. We all know life just doesn't always work like that. But, and I've been challenged on this myself in recent months, I would challenge those of you who are regularly pushing through a Sabbath, and as I say, I'm still working on it myself, to question whether you're pushing past your limit actually shows a lack of trust in God. Am I relying on my own strength and therefore needing to push through my Sabbath in this situation, rather than getting to the end of day six and going, that's my time, I need a rest. God will give me that time needed to get everything done. I'll give you an example of that. Both my wife Nikki and I, we're both teachers, our poor children, and we know that, like many, our job is one that if you let it, it could take every single day of the week, whether you're in a classroom or not. We've always tried to keep our weekends free to give up time, to make sure we have time for our children. We enjoy spending time with our children, just so we're clear, and to recharge. But when we recently got to the Christmas break, we actually realized that, as we thought about it, were we actually keeping that Sabbath in the way that we thought we were? Yes, we were protecting time at the weekend, but we were spending more time in the evenings working. We were rushing that bedtime routine, as I've already mentioned. And for those in relationships, a date night does not count as working in the same room as each other. Definitely more useful ways to spend a date night. So we're still working in our own strength when we do this, as we think about it. All we're doing is changing when we work, so we can technically say, yes, our Sunday's protected. But actually, we're still having our energy still being impacted. So we set ourselves a goal. We said we'd now no longer bring work home with us during the week as well as at the weekend. We stayed in school until 5 p.m. I know, bursting the bubble for all of you. Teachers don't actually clock off at 3. We stayed in school until 5 each day. We get our work done, and then we come home. We're currently still holding each other to that. There are some nights when that just simply isn't possible, deadlines looming and things that have to be done. Again, as I said, that odd time of pushing through the Sabbath, very different to regularly doing it. But we've seen a massive difference in our house. It's not a perfect house. Those of you that have spent time in our house will know it's not a quiet house. We have 3 between the age of 7 and 2, so it's never going to be a quiet house. But we spend more time with the kids. That 16th time of reading the book is not a problem. And we also spend more time with each other and with God, both together and separately. The best bit, as I think about it, I still get the same amount of work done. Because I'm trusting in that time that's been allotted rather than making up for that time. So that example, I think, also ties into our last bit here. Self-control. So if you can turn with me to Galatians chapter 5, verses 22 and 23. We see here why self-control is quite so important to God. So as we read here, it says, "But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law." So we read here that actually self-control isn't simply something that it would be nice if we worked on. It's one of the fruits of the Spirit. So just to recap, the fruits of the Spirit, and I'm not going to go into all of the fruits of the Spirit, that's a whole other series. Fruits of the Spirit that we talk about here are 9 godly character traits that are developed as we grow in our walk with God. But they're not simply badges that we collect. Year 2, there's your next one. Year 3, there's your next one. It's not a participation medal, a turn-up thing. We have to work at these. But also, they're what people see. They're the way we show our faith and who God is through our daily interactions with people. He is joyful. He is faithful. He has self-control. They're doing things. As I say, it's another sermon, Fruits of the Spirit, so I'm not going to steal anybody's thunder there. Maybe practicing my self-control as I stay a little focused. We're told here that to be more godly and Christ-like, to show God through our actions, we have to work on self-control. Why are we told to work on self-control? Because self-control allows us to stay focused, committed, and resistant to temptations. That athlete. Self-control, it's not simply about making good use of our time or avoiding wasting money on Amazon. Not everything on Amazon, just to be clear, but my own shopping habits. And also, I'm aware both of these will be talked about at a later date, so I'm not going to steal Barney's talk either. So, whether it's looking after our physical energy by having self-control and going to bed at a sensible time rather than binge-watching a TV series on a school night, a friend was telling me that's something he struggles with, or our mental energy by limiting the amount of time spent on social media, scrolling through all the ways you should be more successful, wealthier, or fitter. Again, I'm praying for my friend deeply as he struggles with these two afflictions. I personally find it's useful to visualize the fruits of the Spirit as a set of supporting pillars or stones that my building, my faith, stands on top of. Can I still have a faith without the supporting pillar of self-control? Maybe. But, and it's a big but, will my faith be as strong, resistant to temptation, unshakable as it could be without one of these supporting pillars? I guarantee you 100% not. Self-control is one of these pillars that allows my faith and trust in God to weather the storms of life, those storms that we all know will come. Not working on self-control makes it harder to work with my whole heart, as I'm asked to. It makes it harder for me to keep the Sabbath. And therefore harder, if not impossible, for me to look after my physical and mental energy. As I prep for this, I thought about my own journey on this topic, and I would suggest that if you're finding it hard to give your whole heart to tasks or to keep a Sabbath, look first at self-control. Work on that one first, and the Sabbath becomes easier to hold. Giving that energy to the task that you really don't want to becomes easier to do. But like anything we want to develop or grow, we have to create the right environment for it. Whether we're like a gardener helping a plant to grow by providing the right soil and sunlight, or me as a parent trying to teach my middle child to independently play whilst I write a sermon. I do love Isaac dearly and his million questions. I've got to create the right environment for him to succeed. And this brings me into the final part of today. You might be pleased to hear as we get to 12:15. In order to achieve that goal of protecting our physical and mental energy and growing our spiritual energy, which is ultimately our reliance on God, let's just have a look at this first passage here. We're going to have a look at two passages with this. But to work on these, we're going to go to Isaiah, first of all, chapter 40, verse 31. Probably know this quite well. Those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They'll soar on wings like eagles. They'll run and not grow weary. They'll walk and not be faint. So it turns out it's not just Red Bull that gives you wings. It's actually in the Bible. Just saying, it's in the Bible. But in order to achieve this goal, just like the gardener, we have to create the right environment, as I said. Like a gardener who's not just putting the right soil, but they're then continuing to watch for weeds. Or a parent making sure those independent tasks aren't too hard, that there's inevitably going to be lots of questions. We have to watch for things that will make stewarding our physical and mental energy harder. Like an athlete who wants to be stronger or fitter, but chooses to eat 5 fast food meals a day. It's not going to work. We need to set ourselves up for success, wherever we can. And part of the reason for that is it means we're only battling those things we can't control. So this final bit I want to talk about, I've referred to as the vampire activities, as you'll see there. I want to really clarify why I'm calling them the vampire activities before we all start either feeling very judged or getting a bit confused. So let's turn to Isaiah 55, verse 2, and that might help us first of all. So our final verse for today, it says, "Why spend money on what is not bread, on your labor on what does not satisfy? Listen, listen to me, and eat what is good, and you will delight in the richest of fare." So obviously there's some cultural relevance here in what Isaiah is saying to the people of Jerusalem when he talks. Bread was the bulk of their diet. Bread nourishes them. So I'm hoping I'm not going to be struck down on the way home after church today, but if we were to maybe translate this slightly into a 2026 version, I've checked the Message version, it doesn't quite work. So a 2026 version, it might be something along the lines of, why spend money on things that don't nourish you? Why use your energy, your labor, so it refers to there, because remember it's a doing thing, energy, on things that don't make you complete. Instead, take in what is good for you, and you will be truly rich. I apologize if I've been very blasphemous there, but I think it's okay. So, this is why, as I say, I wanted to clarify what I mean when I talk about the vampire activities. We're talking about things that don't help. I'm not simply saying that late night TV, social media, drinking, nights out, etc., is all bad. If we actually think about the term vampire, whatever form they take, they drain blood from a victim, whether the fictitious character of Dracula or the real-life vampire bat in nature. So when I use this term vampire activities, I'm not referring to any context with nighttime, I'm referring to things that drain our energy. Activities that take us away, either directly or indirectly. And that will be different for everyone. Some people are great at stopping after that one episode of TV midweek. My friend is not. So, as I say, I'll go back to my hypothetical friend who struggles with his TV series and his doom scrolling. As I said, I'm going to use real references. So this is something I really struggled with and something that by Christmas I really wasn't happy about. I was sluggish getting out of bed in the morning. I was snapping at the kids and just finding that for someone who would like to think they're quite a positive person, the glass was more half empty than half full. So I took some time over Christmas. Rather than going on the internet and finding out what ChatGPT said on it, I prayed. The thing that came more and more to me was about sleep. And we all know that sleep is critical to our energy levels, whether mental and physical. You can have as much food as you want to keep you physically active, but if you're knackered, it's still not going to work. And so this TV watching was a problem. It's the way I switch off, though, for me. It's part of my way of relaxing. Switch off, watch TV, lose myself. My wife does it with a book instead. But for me, one episode easily turns into three. And then why not just finish the series? There's only two left. So, like all good husbands, I turned to my lovely wife, Nikki, and I said, I'm not going to watch TV past 10 p.m. anymore. Now, she smiled, trying to protect Nikki. Nikki clarified when I read this with her. I laughed hard. But more importantly, she has helped me stick to it. Even when my self-control is absolutely not as focused. There's some great TV at the moment. Great TV out there, but I'll have to wait. I also realized that actually, even when I was going to bed on time, if I woke up in the middle of the night, I was really bad at checking my phone. Check my phone and see what social media says about how I should be fitter, healthier, more active, all those things. So I made a really simple choice. I left my phone downstairs at night. I've also set a 5-minute limit on my social media app. Now, this might seem really naff to some people. If you're highly competitive, I would suggest you try this. Being highly competitive myself, social media seems to think this is a great thing at the end to say when you get to your 5 minutes. Would you like to ignore your limit today? I'm so competitive, I am not being outdone by Facebook. So that absolutely guarantees that I will say no and switch the app off rather than removing it for the day. So if you're like me and highly competitive, that might be one to use. My wife, on the other hand, is very good at just switching her phone off and leaving it. But as I say, I can only speak personally about these vampire activities. It's why in those three questions, I gave them as an example for you to think about. What I can tell you, though, is these what quite be quite simple changes for me have had a really big difference. I feel physically and mentally better, in a better place. I feel I'm setting a better example in my house, something I'm called to do. By no means a perfect example, but a better one. And as I think about it, now that I leave my phone downstairs, when I wake up in the morning, the first thing I look at is not the world news or social media. It's my daily devotional that I've got by the side of my bed, which used to be second. My daily devotional that helps with my spiritual energy. I want to finish with highlighting that stewarding your energy will look different to everyone. Resting on the Sabbath will look different to everyone. And what areas in your life need more self-control will be different for everyone. I hope this morning I have managed to explain to you. We go back to our criteria. I have managed to explain to you that the Bible does tell us exactly what we should be doing with our energy. Not in a map with a clear step-by-step route, this is the only way to do it. I would classify it more as a framework. There's a fair bit of difference for everyone, but there is a clear guide. To look at our own lives and identify the areas we need to focus on. So, those three questions, only you can answer those. Have I managed to do my part? Well, I hope you feel either the importance or even a bit more confident about answering those questions. What parts of my life are taking the most of my energy? What parts of my life is God asking me to give more energy to? And what's God asking me to do to reset it? Because knowing what's wrong is fine. We're also called to action. Energy is a doing word.